Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Payne and Pendergast on the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage. We're going to be digging deep into this game over, I would say, tomorrow will be heavy on previewing the game itself. Keys to the game, predictions. Probably get some season predictions in tomorrow as well. So, Seth, get a good bottle of wine today and sit down at a table somewhere and scratch out all your season predictions for the NFL. Alcohol usually helps me with that. You do what you want to do.
But I haven't drank in 2 weeks.
So really?
I can't break it for that.
Okay. Well, could that explain why you said earlier you were in a bit of an ornery mood, that you haven't drank in a couple of weeks?
I don't know. I think alcohol tends to – well, the abuse of alcohol tends to put me in an ornery mood.
Yeah.
So I do this every now and then just to prove to myself that I'm all right.
Yeah.
That all the people telling me I have a problem are way out of line. That's all.
Okay. Well, we look forward to welcoming you back to those that drink in the very near future.
Yeah, now that once I stop thinking I'm better than you, is that what you're saying, Sean?
Yeah, a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Just kidding. So DeAndre Hopkins, Jadeveon Clowney get their deals done. Seth, I still have some questions about the Texans with Hopkins, because I think you and I are on the same page from this standpoint, is that I don't think it's just as simple as, well, the math didn't work with DeAndre wanting a new deal. You know, just you can only pay so many people. I think that's true. You can only pay so many people, but DeAndre Hopkins is undeniably great at what he does. And I wonder what the other questions were. I do think not being on the practice field was probably maybe a secondary issue in this whole thing. How do you think the Texans think DeAndre Hopkins' game is going to age over the next few years? Because we know that when wide receivers, you know, the age for running backs is usually 28, right? When running backs hit 28, if you go look at all the great ones, most of them start to dip off of a cliff, with a few exceptions, at about the age of 28. Wide receivers have a little bit more of a shelf life, but not much longer than that. Early 30s, 30, 31 is when it starts to dip for some, again, with few exceptions. DeAndre's never been a guy who's relied on just explosiveness in terms of speed or whatever for his game. How do you think his game is going to age, and how much do you think that factors in for the Texans?
I think he'll age pretty well.
Yeah.
For one, I mean, he takes care of his body. He's one of the few guys who actually is a steady distance runner. And by distance, I mean distance by NFL standards. Like, he'll go run 5 miles. He's not, like, going out and running marathons or anything. But he'll go out and
he like. A lot.
Yes. Well, I mean, for the most part, you know, you're an anaerobic athlete. It's all sprints and bursts and intervals,
yeah,
and everything. Like, a long run for most football players, if you run 800-meter intervals in the off season. So
right.
For a guy that'll actually run 5 miles during the season to keep his endurance up, he cares about keeping his body in shape. Anquan Boldin, you know, and it's Anquan Boldin was not, like, a consistent 1,000-yard performer throughout his career. But he was a really steady and good wide receiver for a long, long time. His last 1,000-yard season was in 2014 when he was 34 years old. He played until he was 36 years old. He had 67 catches at the age of 36. And Anquan Boldin did a lot of things. Like, he's the easy comparison with Deshaun Watson. Not blazingly fast, but super strong, and will just flat-out out-compete people for footballs. I think that DeAndre will have that. I guess the question is, you know, DeAndre's double move has in the past been lethal and he's been a deep threat. You know, it's not like he's incapable of being a deep threat. It just kind of went away last year, and I think it was partly because of the way defenses were game planning the Texans offense and the fact that DeAndre Hopkins was the one guy that was consistently out there and one of the healthy threats. The Texans ran the ball better in the beginning of the year than they did at the end of the year. And it wasn't they were able to play coverage a lot. They didn't have to load up the box to stop the Texans' run. They didn't have to have eight guys up in the box. That meant that you had seven guys in coverage on any given play, and they were much more concerned about DeAndre Hopkins than they really were concerned about Carlos Hyde or whoever else was trotting out there. You know, that's happened the last couple of years. 2 years ago, remember how bad it was at the end of the season where Deshaun Watson was the leading rusher in like two out of the last three games?
I remember.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
So I think that, frankly, I think DeAndre is going to have a better year this year than he had last year. And part of it's going to be because I think he's going to be in a more explosive offense. I don't think Kyler Murray is as good a quarterback as Deshaun Watson, but I think DeAndre is going to have more room to run in that Arizona offense.
When they throw the ball more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's Cliff Kingsbury. It's an air raid offense. They're just the sheer number. I'm guessing just the sheer number of attempts. Plus, it's not a great defensive team in a really tough division. They're probably going to be behind a lot. They're going to be throwing the football. That Anquan Boldin one is an interesting one, Seth, because that is a comp that gets brought up for DeAndre. I think just because both guys are perceived to not have that extra gear to get behind a defense. But I think DeAndre is maybe a more acrobatic, athletic, explosive version of Anquan Boldin. I'm trying to think of who other comps might be whose games have aged well. What about Larry Fitzgerald, his new teammate? I mean, that's a guy he's not what he was, say, in the early part of this decade, but he's a guy who's managed to stick around for a long, long time being moderately productive.
Well, and I think just like DeAndre Hopkins, like DeAndre has spent a lot of time in the slot over the last couple seasons, and Larry Fitzgerald made that transition from being a pure outside guy to a slot receiver. I guess Larry Fitzgerald had more of the classic X receiver traits than DeAndre Hopkins did, so I guess that's why he doesn't get the comparison as much.
Yeah.
Gus and Katie is furious with us, saying it's a terrible comparison, Anquan Boldin. I'm talking about longevity, Gus. Come on, you got a better one? He says Chris Carter. I say balderdash to your Chris Carter comparison.
Yeah.
I think that's a terrible comparison, Gus.
So DeAndre Hopkins, I'm looking right now, he's the 78th all-time leading receiver in terms of yards in the history of football. He's the 8th leading active receiver. He's got 8,602 yards. So, Seth, does he crack the 10,000-yard career mark? That would have to be 1,400 yards this year.
Oh, does he crack it this year?
Does he crack it this year? 14?
Yeah, I don't think so.
You don't think he gets to 1,400
yards? That's a lot of 100 yards for a wide receiver.
It is. But
he's seen where he's going to have to be sharing some of his targets.
Okay, yeah. I think he gets close.
It's called a spread offense for a reason. I mean, they're going to spread the wealth out there, I think.
Yeah.
I also think that, let's see, we have somebody else, and I get the sentiment. Can we please stop talking about Hopkins? It's the day before a Texans game against the defending champs.
Yeah.
Hop is gone. Can we move on to? I get where you're coming from. DeAndre Hopkins just signed a huge contract extension yesterday. That's why we're talking about Hopkins. It's not like we were sitting around on Sunday and thought, what should we talk about on Wednesday? How about DeAndre Hopkins whole bunch?
Yeah. Well, it plays into the – I think we've done a good job today of talking about how it plays into how this roster is currently constructed. They not only moved on from Hopkins, but they ostensibly moved to a different style of offense. We'll find out more tomorrow night, but let's move there right now, actually. Bill O'Brien talked yesterday about the speed on both sides for each of these teams.
Yeah, they can fly. I mean, they can fly. And be a lot of speed in this game. Be a lot of speed. You know, a lot of guys on the field that can run on both sides of the ball relative to their positions, wide receivers that can run, linebackers that can run, DBs that can run, defensive linemen that can run. You know, so it's going to be a game with a bunch of guys out there that are really good athletic football players. So I think it's going to be exciting to watch.
All right. So is there an advantage on one side or the other with the speed tomorrow, Seth? We know that the Texans in some ways are probably trying to emulate the Chiefs with what they did strategically this offseason and moving on from Hopkins and moving Cooks, Cobb, hanging on, Fuller and Stills, obviously both still here. That's a lot of speed. David Johnson. If we went team by team, group by group here for tomorrow, is there a team that has the overall speed advantage? I think the Chiefs probably, well, I don't know. I'll just throw the question out there. Do you think there's an advantage on one side or the other for these two teams?
Well, I think if you went position by position, I think, or even unit by unit, I think the Chiefs' defense has a speed advantage over the Texans. Both along the defensive front, I mean, you have Chris Jones up there, you have Frank Clark. That's a faster overall unit. I think if you look at Tyrann Mathieu at safety, I think he alone kind of sets apart that unit. When it comes to offense, though, gosh, I would say that the Chiefs' wide receiving core is scarier, but I'd have to give the speed advantage to the Texans. Because Sammy Watkins isn't an overly fast guy. He's fast enough, but he's not like a 4.3 guy. I would say the Chiefs have a better wide receiving core, but the Texans, for whatever it's worth, is actually a faster wide receiving core.
Let me counterpoint you on that. One, you're assuming that Cooks plays in this game, obviously.
Yeah, Cook, that's yeah,
right.
That's,
so Cook,
that's one
Cooks,
big assumption.
Cooks did. We need to be clear on that. Cooks was not limited in practice. He did not practice yesterday. That there's a distinction there that needs to be made. So this isn't a Hopkins thing that he's been the last year where he's got a, ow, my arm, it's broken. Oh, and then I play on Sunday. Like, Cooks did not practice yesterday. I think the other thing I would point out, Seth, is one, I think, well, I don't know, Tyreek Hill, Will Fuller. Tyreek Hill might be the most functional fast person on the field. You know what I mean? Like, Tyreek Hill can blaze, and they use him in the run game too. Like, he is a scary, scary weapon. Mecole Hardman's pretty fast for them. And when we talk about speed, Travis Kelce is not a 4.4 guy or anything like that, but he's probably going to be faster than any of the guys the Texans throw.
Yeah, we didn't go to tight ends. I would say, yeah, for the tight ends, definitely.
Yeah, I just look at them all as pass catchers.
Speed advantage. Okay, yeah. Then what about the running backs? Because I think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is very fast and very athletic, but I don't think he's going to be used all that heavily. I think that most rookies at all positions are going to be used as sparingly as possible by these coaches with no training camp or combined practices to really indoctrinate them into the NFL. And then especially when it comes to pass protection, you can't trust a rookie running back. I think they're going to be very careful in how they use Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, maybe they just say, well, screw it, we don't want him in pass protection. We're just going to spread it out as much as possible. But I think if you add Duke Johnson and David Johnson together and their speed and their movement in the open field, I'd give the speed advantage to the Texans in the backfield.
Should be fun. Two fast teams. How weather affects all that, we'll have to wait and see, because apparently, according to John McClain, it's raining pretty hard in Kansas City. So we will keep an eye on the weather for sure and how that affects the speed for each of these two teams. Now, last year in Week 6, the weather was sunny and beautiful, and so was the outcome of the game. The Texans beat the Chiefs in Week 6 last year. If you want to relive the magic of a win over the Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium, it's a Texans Radio special presentation tonight, 8 o'clock, commercial-free, the last of our games that we are replaying throughout the world's biggest pregame show here on Sports Radio 610. Texans and Chiefs, we're a little over 34 hours from kickoff, so good times ahead tomorrow as the NFL season as a whole gets kicked off right here on Sports Radio 610. Bradley Roby said something yesterday that had Seth getting a surreal feeling, thinking back to his 10-year career. We'll let you hear from Bradley Roby and from Seth Payne next. All right, so we know that one of the big trades made last year before the trade deadline was a Laremy Tunsil-type deal that the Rams made to bring in Jalen Ramsey, who I think is widely thought to be one of, if not the best, cornerbacks in all of football. The Rams closed the deal with Jalen Ramsey long-term this morning. This from Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network just a few minutes ago. The LA Rams are making Jalen Ramsey the highest-paid defensive back in the NFL, in NFL history. And by a wide margin, Seth Payne, the extension is for $105 million over 5 years, $21 million per year, and has $71.2 million in guarantees at signing. This brings the defensive back market into a new stratosphere. So this brings us to another interesting place that you had brought up earlier today. We know that when Bill O'Brien traded for Laremy Tunsil, traded two first-round picks and other stuff for Tunsil and Stills, but really for Tunsil, that he caught a lot of heat because he didn't sign Laremy Tunsil to an extension at the time. He left, he's going to become a free agent. You got to be careful, you know. And then, you know, lo and behold, they don't need to use the franchise tag or anything. They sign him to a deal. And the Rams did the same thing with Ramsey, and nobody said boo about it. Nobody said boo about them not signing Ramsey to a deal. And by the way, had another deal in place with Brandon Cooks where they absorbed a $22 million hit to get rid of a bad contract that they had. Following up here, you remember the follow-up criticism of the Texans for the Tunsil deal?
Oh, everybody presented the 2-year extension like that was the average that he was making. Like, it was a $23 million a year
that
deal.
It was a $3 or $4 million a year overpay. Boy, not only did he reset the market, he reset the market into the stratosphere. Well, lo and behold, the word stratosphere is in this tweet by Ian Rapoport. So now, yes, on an average per year basis of the new money, Jalen Ramsey just completely leapfrogs Byron Jones and Tre'Davious White, who signed earlier this week. He signed an extension that was $17.5 million a year. Yeah, this is $21 million. Almost the same margin that Laremy Tunsil signed for over, I think it was Lane Johnson maybe, for new money. Let's see if the Rams get similar criticism now. That they, boy, not only they got really raked over the coals because they put themselves in this spot. That was the criticism for O'Brien, is are Les Snead and Sean McVay immune to the criticism for doing literally the exact same thing the Texans did, just at a different position?
Yeah, and this is the thing I keep trying to remind myself and others. It's that right now it feels like the Chiefs are going to be winning football games forever. And it wasn't but 2 years ago that the Chiefs and the Rams played in the regular season in Mexico City. Well, no, that was the game that was rescheduled for Mexico City. But the Chiefs and the Rams played, and that was the game that redefined what football was going to be like from this point forward. Nothing but offense all the time. And, woo, how's anybody ever going to stop Wonder Boy Sean McVay? Now Sean McVay's at a point where he's got salary cap trouble. He just fired the special teams coach and the defense coordinator, whose units were both better than his own offensive unit last year. And Sean McVay doesn't look quite like the wunderkind that everybody just had created out of him like 2 years ago. That was his destiny, to be the guy that was going to be terrorizing everybody for the rest of all time. Yeah, it's look, Sean, the longer I spend watching the NFL, the more convinced I am that the vast majority of general managers really don't know what the hell they're doing. They really, it's like they're playing with Monopoly money, and the owners don't really, that's not their area of expertise, nor do they want to work 80 hours a week being a general manager. So they just kind of throw stuff at a wall and play with the owner's money.
It's hard to win in the NFL, not to go all cliche, but it's really hard to win year to year. And Seth, when you bring up the Chiefs, and we talked to Carrington Harrison a little bit earlier in the show, he's a host in Kansas City, and he basically said the expectations in Kansas City, and he said this to me when I was on his show earlier this week, is that they're not talking about repeating for a Super Bowl. They're talking about the number of Super Bowls they're going to win in Kansas City. And you bring that up, and I look, and I go, okay, you know who they were saying a lot of the same things about 10 years ago, about the team and the quarterback that they are right now? Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Yeah.
When Aaron Rodgers and the Packers won the Super Bowl in 2010, Rodgers was in his third year as the starter. Now, Mahomes is going into his third year as the starter because he didn't start his rookie year. But they're at similar junctures with, I think Andy Reid's probably a better coach than Mike McCarthy was, but Ted Thompson was considered for years and years to be one of the best general managers in football. They were certainly thought to be a team that had the foundation for a team that was going to dominate the NFL for the next 10 years. You know how many Super Bowls they've even been back to since then? Zero. They have not been back to a Super Bowl. Now, they've had some great seasons. The very next year, they went 15-1, but Eli Manning knocked them out of the playoffs. They went 11-5. Then they go 8-7-1, 12-4, 10-6. Then they have a few years where Aaron Rodgers is either having down years or he's injured, where they're hovering around 500. The point is that even if you're a great team, this thing is still a one-and-done tournament in the postseason, man. If someone has a game plan for you, you have a bad day, they make a play, the ball bounces the wrong way, you don't have six other games in a seven-game series to recover from that. This is really, really hard for even great teams, great quarterbacks, great architects to put together.
It is, and one thing that Carrington Harrison said that isn't coming directly from the Chiefs, you know, but I think that it's a sentiment that probably a lot of people in Kansas City feel and elsewhere. It's that Kansas City doesn't really take the Ravens seriously, apparently, according to Carrington. Look, I take that Ravens defense seriously, and I take Lamar Jackson seriously. I've still got questions about Lamar Jackson, but for the moment, I take him serious as a heart attack. And I think this year is going to be way more competitive. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be way more competitive than anybody wants to give them credit
100%.
For right now.
100%
you know,
agree.
Ben Roethlisberger threw for 5,000 yards the last time he played a full season in the NFL. Now, that was with a slightly saner version of Antonio Brown for two-thirds of the season. So it's not like they don't have their challenges on offense, but they've got a really good defense. And to think that just somehow because the Chiefs had What they have, they had a hell of a stretch. They had a hell of a run during the playoffs. You know, the offensive line played their asses off. That offensive line that I saw in the playoffs out of the Chiefs was way better than the one I saw during the regular season. There are elements to this team that are not Patrick Mahomes that we still don't really know about. You know, there are still untested elements on that offensive line. Just the Duvernay-Tardif, for instance. Just him being gone for a season and all these other various factors. I don't know exactly how good, but to preordain them as the champions for the next 10 years, it's like you've never actually watched NFL to think that it's as simple as that.
If it were more of a back and forth that we had a little bit earlier, because it was really more of an interview that we had with him, we were trying to get the Kansas City side of things, but if we were sitting at a bar talking about this, what I would point out, Seth, to Kansas City in terms of their historical significance, in terms of them trying to go make history, not just win a Super Bowl, but be a dynasty, I would point out two things. One, in sort of the micro of what last postseason was, they had perhaps the easiest path to a Super Bowl through the AFC that you can possibly have. They, and by the way, they can thank the Miami Dolphins. If the Miami Dolphins don't rise up and beat the Patriots in Week 17 in Foxborough as a 17-point underdog, the Chiefs would have had to play in the wild card round. Instead, the Chiefs get a bye in the first round because the Patriots inexplicably lost that game. And the Chiefs wound up with a path to the Super Bowl that instead of being a 3 seed and having to play a home game wild card and then probably go on the road twice, instead they get a bye, they get the Texans at home, and then they get the Titans, the 6 seed, at home to get to the Super Bowl. So that's number one. So let's not sit here and just denigrate the AFC because you happen to beat the 4 and the 6 seed with a bye before these teams to get to the Super Bowl. The other thing I would point out is just, if we're looking for little cracks in the armor, some of these guys on this Chiefs team that are sitting there talking, well, why not talk about 4 Super Bowls and 5 Super Bowls? And, you know, Chris Jones and then Tyreek Hill saying, well, let's talk about 7 Super Bowls. This does not appear, at least at the star power level, to be a team that's handling success, some of these guys, all that well. You know, that they're talking openly about that stuff matters. And if they're talking about it, they're not the only ones talking about it.
Hey, Sean, since we started off this segment talking about Jalen Ramsey and the huge contract he got, worth pointing out that David Mulligetta is Jalen Ramsey's
agent. I know.
David Mulligetta is pulling off, like, as on the one hand, we're having conversations about, well, gosh, are guys not even going to have agents anymore? I mean, look at DeAndre Hopkins, look at Laremy Tunsil. And then on the other hand, we have David Mulligetta, who continues to get record-breaking contracts for his players. Buda Baker is one of his clients. Yeah. Jalen Ramsey, one of his clients. Deshaun Watson, one of his clients. Earl Thomas got a good deal from the Ravens when a lot of teams like the Texans thought that maybe Earl Thomas didn't even want to play football anymore. Yeah.
David Mulligetta has reset 3 markets in the last 2 weeks. Safety, corner, and quarterbacks not named Patrick Mahomes.
Well, and I'll tell you why. From talking to David Mulligetta, when we had our interview of Deshaun Watson up here in the Verizon Lounge in Houston, or at the station here, I don't know if you got to talk to David at all.
I was talking
to him. I don't think you were part of the conversation. Yeah. But he was. So David Mulligetta, Deshaun Watson's agent, was there. And he was telling me the story about how he met Earl Thomas in college and just some of the way he operates. And I think his clients really feel like he gets life and understands life and cares about them more than just the financial aspect.
Yeah. Jerry Maguire deal, man.
Well, and I don't want to misphrase that. I don't want to get this story wrong, but I believe what he told me was when he first met Earl Thomas, I believe David Mulligetta was in either graduate school or law school. Earl Thomas was an undergrad. And at the time, David Mulligetta's advice to Earl Thomas was that maybe he should stop playing football and focus on his academics. So, like, it was not like one of these opportunistic moments where David Mulligetta saw dollar signs or something. Like, David Mulligetta really was counseling him through and was trying to figure out what was best for Earl Thomas. And they formed a relationship that way, and that's how David Mulligetta got into being an agent.
I hope he's still doing that because Earl could use the help right now.
I wonder if now is having. Hey, remember when we talked about 15 years ago?
Yeah. Let's revisit that.
I'll try to fact check that story. I'm sure I got some detail of it wrong.
It's all good. It's the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans and Chiefs coverage here on Sports Radio 610. We remind you, listen tonight, 8 o'clock, a Texans Radio special presentation. Relive the Week 6 win over the Chiefs commercial free.
What I'm trying to tell you, Sean, is that I'd had a few drinks by the time David Mulligetta was telling me that story.
I got you.
That's my disclaimer.
That's fair enough. We put an asterisk on that story. An alcohol-related asterisk goes on to the story. We will get to the story that Seth was going to tell. There's a Bradley Roby cut from yesterday that gave Seth Payne a bit of a surreal feeling. We'll get to that. We'll also lay out what Thursday is going to look like. Thursday is going to be crazy here in the city of Houston for sports fans as we roll on with a world's biggest pregame show edition of Payne and Pendergast on a Wednesday. Stay there. 34 is a magic number. It is the number of hours less than that we are away from the game, as the man just said. Payne and Pendergast rolling on with you here on a Wednesday. Tomorrow is game day Thursday, and not a lot of hitting has gone on in training camp for these guys. There have been no preseason games, no joint practices. The extent of the hitting has basically been some hitting, but no taking guys to the ground. Bradley Roby met with the media yesterday, talked about getting that first lick in a game.
That first hit is definitely going to wake you up if you're not ready. So, those first couple plays when you're out there, just running around. And I think that's that first hit. When you get that first hit, you get them on the ground, get up, I think that's when it's like, okay, like we out here, we playing, it's for real, full speed, So I think naturally for everyone, when you get hit in the mouth, it's when you wake up.
I got to say, Bradley Roby, I think he has that same knack that Ted Johnson does, Sean, of being able to bring back the feelings and emotions of playing football. Ooh. I don't know if our listeners, anybody who played high school or college football or Pop Warner football, feel that same way. But like as Bradley Roby is describing that, it put me right back into, oh yeah, that's what the first game is like. It's like the first time you actually hit someone because you're nervous beforehand. It's the same feeling you get before you get in a fist fight. It's like you're angry, but you're nervous as hell. But you're not going to let anybody know you're nervous. And then as soon as you get hit, everything kind of loosens up and everything flows after that. And it's such a weird and surreal environment. I hadn't really thought about that in a long time until Bradley Roby was talking about it. But I would say that going back to high school football, it's one of the only places where you can go out as a group and go out and do violent things to somebody else. And it's so primordial. Like it's like some ancient drive that we have, like a tribal thing almost. And it's really the only sport that's quite like that, like the collisions and the actual violence. And, man, it makes me miss it. Usually I don't miss football anymore because when I go out to practices, I just think about, like, oh, it's so hot, and I'm in so much pain just right now. It's just such a unique experience. And
is it a rush?
Yeah, it's a rush, and I don't know. I don't know if there's anything in life that it's quite the same. It's probably it's the closest to actual combat that any of us or most of us will ever get. Yeah. And I'm not sitting here making that comparison. Like, it's like war out there. I think that sports in general is a replacement for actual combat. Like, that's probably why we play sports, and that's why we wrestle and box and all that, because it's, back in the day, that was the way we prepared to actually go out and fight other tribes or other villages or what have you. But now it's kind of, it satisfies our urge for that. And I don't think anything does it quite like football. You could be in martial arts or MMA or something like that, and that's largely an individual thing. But when you go out with a group of people and you're doing it like that, it's just a feeling that's not like any other. I remember when Brandy was doing roller derby, she said that women would say that all the time, because most women have never played like a contact collision sport until all of a sudden they're adults and doing roller derby, and they're like, holy crap, this is like, I've been missing this my whole life. This is awesome. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know if it's like the bloodlust is good, but I miss my bloodlust, and I've got it back now.
How have they not done a reality show on the Payne family between you with your bloodlust and Brandy doing roller derby? I feel like there's something there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we could probably do a pretty good reality show. I'd have to start drinking again, though.
Yeah, that's okay.
If they want Max Seth Payne.
Right. Well, no, we need entertainment, obviously. But
that's where, when I used to listen to you guys with Ted would, or if I did a show with Ted has this really, really cool ability to kind of take you back to what it actually feels like in the locker room or on the field or anything.
Yeah, he's very descriptive. No doubt about that.
All you young teenagers out there playing your high school football right now, really savor the violent aspect of it, because you shouldn't do this anywhere other than a football
yeah,
field.
No, hit after yeah. the whistle and don't let your coach yell at you for it. You've got to, like, because not a lot of you are going to go play at the next level. You got to get your hitting in while you can.
Yeah, you're just satisfying your primordial urge
That's
to
it.
Do harm.
That's
yeah.
it. It's probably a replacement for something that would be a whole lot more dangerous. So just keep it on the football field. Seth, are we underrating a little bit heading into this game? And really, this goes for all 32 teams. Well, the whatever portion of the 32 teams have not been doing full-on hitting in practice, you hear coaches and players talk all the time about building up that sort of callus to football violence. From what I watched out of training camp, there's still a lot of callus that needs to be built up. There was pads out there, and there was pads hitting each other, but there was not a lot of, really at all, maybe other than Lonnie Johnson hitting Chad Hansen in the scrimmage and injuring him, there wasn't a lot of hitting going on. Are we underrating maybe the lack of hitting callus that's going to go on, and how does that manifest itself?
I think I may have been early in camp, because I've always been an advocate that, look, I think there's ways to teach tackling without actually tackling or without using full pads. I mean, rugby teams do it all the time. And for a long time, football coaches underutilized those techniques. I think over the last 10 years or so, really since the last CBA, coaches by necessity have gotten better at teaching the – I think coaches teach tackling more now than they did in, like, 1997. Because it really used to be a whole lot of, like, yeah, wrap and drive your feet. And they didn't really break down the science of tackling. So I kind of – I've always argued, like, all right, look, the pads are overrated. But now when it comes to actually – even if you're not going to the ground, but going against other teams
yeah.
with combined practices, getting a few tastes of a preseason game, you know, two or three series of preseason game. Yeah, I think whether you want to call it callousing or body hardening or anything, I think the Army, like 20 years ago, started to feel like most of its soldiers or a lot of its soldiers were getting a little too soft. This was before, I think this was before the first Gulf War, because they hadn't seen combat and it wasn't necessarily. So they started like body hardening, like actually just going out and being sure people were taking physical abuse in some way. I think that, yeah, I think football players might suffer from that right now. Like this first week or two, the first real, there's usually a ramp up where, okay, you have mini camps, then you have training camp, and you're not really going real hard the first few days. Then all of a sudden you have training camp, hard, you know, full padded practices. Then you might have a combined scrimmage with a team. Then you have preseason games. I mean, they're going from 0 to 60 here immediately.
Yeah.
And you know, like usually the first regular season game, the first couple series are like, oh yeah, oh yeah, it's a lot faster when it's for real. And I guess there's not going to be any ramp up here. It's going to be fun. It might be a beautiful disaster. It might be mayhem all over the place.
Well, especially when you add in the fact that they could get some bad weather in Kansas City. How does it manifest itself, though, Seth? How does someone like me, who never hit anybody in a football game before, that lack of callousing that you're talking about, are guys going to get hurt? Are they not, you know, used to, if you're not used to getting hit like that, you know, sometimes people talk about the way you know how to fall and you're
yeah.
bringing your body to the ground. Like there is an art in knowing how to fall, basically.
You know what I would honestly worry about in terms of guys getting injured is, despite the fact that the kickoff and kickoff return has been made safer by the rule changes over the last couple of years,
yeah.
those are the youngest guys on the field. A lot of times they didn't play much special teams in college because they were the studs in college. And they haven't had any time to do actual real full-speed special teams. So the head-on-a-swivel element where, man, and dude, Sean, when I was a rookie, I had to run down on kickoff as a 305-pound defensive lineman. So I was a little bit in that boat, you know, and obviously I wasn't fast enough to be on kickoff. But in the preseason, I did it. And so I wasn't fast enough. That part wasn't going to be a concern. But the actual head-on-a-swivel part
yeah.
of trying to figure out what NFL teams are doing, and it's usually way more complex than anything you saw in college, and I didn't play a whole lot of special teams in college, it's kind of scary. So, like, whether you're a special teams dude or a running back or what have you, for your first taste of NFL special teams to be in a primetime game,
yeah.
we could have some pretty nasty collisions on the special teams.
Interesting, interesting. I'll keep an eye on that as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show, Texans-Chiefs, coming up 7:20 kickoff tomorrow here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, text message, old D-line guy here, Seth. I just got chills. Thanks. So you've mastered the Ted Johnson, the Johnsonian art of bringing people in the moment. Nice work.
Man, I don't want to pander here. Like, I'm not pandering at all. But I will say, because this is 100% honest, I was just talking to somebody about Texas high school football the other day, and like I had an experience. I grew up in a state that high school football was not a big deal. We played on Saturday afternoons at my school. Like it was not the same. Like I'm jealous of people that got to have the high school the Texas high school experience. Yeah. If you're at a good school that got these crazy raucous crowds packed in and everything, and it's a level of football that frankly isn't played at many other places in the country. I'd say California, Texas, and Florida are some of the only places where you have so many of these high-level schools and so many like future NFL players that it's a like whatever you feel when you find yourself talking too much at a party about the good old days, screw that. Keep talking about the good old days.
There you go.
It's a specially and unique experience. You won a state championship at North Shore 20 years ago or something, annoy your children about it. You go full Ted Bundy on them because that's way more than your bum kids are ever going to accomplish. That's what I'll tell them.
I got to go back and air check this show. I feel like you've given out like a half dozen pieces of sage advice today that have been...
except for the bum kids part. Your kids aren't bums.
Screw that. Whatever. I love that. That's great. Hey, I want to remind people of something that we've got going on. Football's finally back, and if you want to pick some football games, you can compete against me. The You Pick 'em, the radio.com/picks You Pick 'em contest from Rocket Mortgage could be worth $10,000 to the winner of the contest, the Pro Football Pick 'em contest. Radio.com/picks. You just got to pick the winner of each game. No lineups, no spreads. It's really easy. And I've already made my picks, so I'm looking forward to competing with you guys again. $10,000. It could be a free $10,000 for you. It costs nothing to sign up. Go to radio.com/picks to sign up for that as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, have you taken the opportunity to peek ahead and see what tomorrow looks like for sports fans here in Houston?
You told me a couple days ago, and it scared me to the point where I didn't want to look at it because I felt a little intimidated by how much greatness I'm going to witness tomorrow. Do you hear me, Rockets? Greatness.
Oh, and you Astros,
will,
by the way.
Series up. Yeah, you know, whatever. So, no,
but they play in the afternoon, so it's a bit of an appetizer for people.
Yeah, no, and I'm joking completely. Yeah. I just the Astros. I'm where you are. I'm like, just get to the playoffs intact, which is a little bit more harrowing than it used to be. But they do play some should be patsies coming up.
Should be a good day, man. Yeah, I have the game on the TV in the background as you listen to Texans Countdown with me and Seth Payne, and then it's a big weekend coming up in Houston, man. What open to the football season and all the basketball. It's good stuff. Good times.
What time are the Astros on tomorrow?
I believe like 2 o'clock, something like that.
2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then what time does our pregame show start?
4:20. 4:20. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Astros should be losing like 8-2 by then. So just catch the first six or seven innings.
Yeah. Armin Williams and Mark Vandermeer getting together to have our start time at 4:20.
Yeah.
Everybody tune in. Kick back and enjoy.
Yeah.
However you want to enjoy it.
Relax. Relax. Yeah. Self-medicate a little bit.
Vandermeer, he's just a scoundrel, that guy.
I know. How about that? Well, either that or the NFL scheduled the actual kickoff for 7:20 and it's a three-hour show. But I like the way you think, Seth Payne. I like the way that you think. All right.
Oh, we didn't tell everybody.
What?
Sean,
I don't
care if we're late. In the Loop can just they can pound sand.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you this, everybody. It looks like, with 99% certainty, that we're going to be able to do our pre- and post-game shows from the stadium itself. So I get to watch. Sean and I get to actually watch live football.
Yes, week two.
And relay the experience to you guys on Monday morning.
That's right.
That'll be next week, obviously, but the Monday morning after
that. Right. We will be in the stadium for the Ravens game, you, me, and Clint. So that's going to be good. Yes, we will talk more about that for sure.
It sounds like we're going to be restricted to, like, our own quadrant. It sounds like – I think there's going to be, like, plastic up, and we're not going to be able to – I don't think we're going to be able to even see other human beings except the, like, one, we're going to go in through a tunnel and then leave through a tunnel.
We will chronicle the experience for all of you on social media for sure. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, Seth. That is week two, but, of course, we've got week one to get through first. Tomorrow, Texans and Chiefs. And I want to make mention here real quick as well that we are trying to raise money for literacy. The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Campaign, the Barbara Bush Houston, what's that?
Our listener, Vanessa Richardson, just pointed out that when I meant to say go full go full Al Bundy on them, I said go full Ted Bundy on them. Kids,
How did I not catch that? High school football players or former Texas high school football players.
Seth, do not go Ted Bundy on the people that complain
the
about
you. Text line. We've not gotten a bigger reaction to anything today than you saying Ted Bundy, Ben Bundy. God, how did that one slip past me? I got too much stuff going on, man. I'm sitting here getting ready for the next promo and this and that, and Ted's got serial killers out there. He's telling kids to act like serial killers.
No, I was telling fathers to act like
Ted Bundy. Charles Manson. Yeah. I meant Charles Barkley. I'm sorry. All right. The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. We need you to text HTX Reads to 41444. And if you donate $30, you're going to be helping an underprivileged child get 6 books of their choosing. There are so few books in low-income households in Houston. 1 book in every 300 low-income households. Literacy is such a huge ripple effect. Making sure that you are at the proper reading level has huge ripple effects for things like crime and quality of life and everything else when you get older. Let's let these kids get a great start in life with some books in the house. Donate at HTX Reads. Text it. HTX Reads to 41444. Seth, we are about out of time. I will see you tomorrow. The taxi theme underneath.
But speaking of which, by the way, a theme of the day, Ted Bundy did represent himself at trial. Just like various NFL players representing themselves.
How is DeAndre Hopkins similar to Ted Bundy? That's next.
Ted Bundy did a hell of a job of it, damn it. I stand by my statement.
Seth, keep the fire going tomorrow at 6 a.m., my friend. Antibodies to you.
I got to get some sleep.
Yeah,
goodbye.
You and me both. We'll see you all tomorrow at 6 a.m. In the Loop is up next. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. A show where they don't glorify serial killers. Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.